Welcome to the instruction period. This morning we're going to continue working through and exploring the instructions based on the foundations of mindfulness and another sutta, the Anapanasati Sutta, mindfulness with breathing. So the four foundations of mindfulness are mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of our feeling world, mindfulness of mind states, so mindfulness of all of our thought processes. Okay. Mindfulness of our thought processes. So in other words, we bring our mindful awareness to all that we think, our views, our judgments, our opinions, our ideas. We know we're thinking because we can bring awareness to it. The fourth of the foundations is mindfulness of the Dhamma, which means mindfulness of the teachings and mindfulness of all things. Yes, please come. So yesterday we took the breath as our object of mindfulness. And today, I want to explain how the word feeling is used in the Dharma teachings. The Pali word is Vedana, and it means the feeling tone of everything we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think. So there's contact through the sense doors. And then very quickly, dependent upon that, we have a pleasant or an unpleasant feeling tone. We like something or we don't like it. Or our feeling can be rather neutral or somewhere in between. So we see something or we see somebody and there's a pleasant feeling, we like it. Or we think of something. We have a thought about the best cappuccino we've ever had. Or we have a thought about something much more complex. We remember our father. We remember our mother. So with every thought, there's a feeling tone. We like it, we don't like it. It's pleasant or unpleasant. And then if we really look and see, what usually happens is dependent upon that feeling, we either experience attraction, so we tend to run after our pleasant feelings and feel aversion or disliking and avoid that which is unpleasant. And if we live with a lack of awareness, what happens is we're simply compelled by our desires. We're compelled in life by our likes and our dislikes. And then we become thrown about emotionally. We go blindly in pursuit of something. And then we feel miserable because it doesn't usually work out as we wanted it to. Or we spend our lives stuck in fear, avoiding many things that bring pain or sorrow. And sometimes fear and anxiety can be so debilitating that our life narrows and becomes really contracted and We can't even go outside and see our friends anymore. This is the extreme fear. So we need to understand as Dharma practitioners this whole movement of mind and to find a way where in the face of the pleasant and the unpleasant and the in-between feelings, we can be rather steady. We can have what's called equanimity. Because otherwise, we would just be ruled by our desires, our compulsiveness, our obsessiveness, and we just run after the pleasant. How many times in this life have we run after the pleasant? Not only do we run after it, we cling to it and hold on to it. And then when it's taken from us, or something shifts and changes, we suffer. We experience agonizing mental anguish because life hasn't worked out how we wanted it to. The person we love has decided they want another partner, and we're devastated. So we're being asked to pay attention to the feeling tone of experience and just to notice this unfolding process that occurs day in, day out as we live. So our relationship to our experience can be one of enormous freedom. So we see the feelings, the pleasant and the unpleasant, but we don't need to be compelled by them. If we can see in that very moment, there I go, liking something, liking somebody. But I don't necessarily need to act on it. I don't need to be driven by it. There's freedom. I can act on it or not. When we're compelled by our emotional world, it's a very painful way to live. Now, our emotions in Dharma language, Vedana, or feeling in English, and emotions are a little different. Our emotions are constructed with the addition of thought. So we have an initial feeling tone of experience, and then on top of that, there's thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and memories that come into play, and that constructs the emotion. And of course, the very strong emotions that tend to be problematic are the emotion of fear and also, of course, the emotion of anger. These two play out in our life in a way that often leads to great misery and great suffering and great sorrow, not only individually but nationally and worldwide. So we need to understand this process and to see if there's a way of being with our world of feelings and thoughts with freedom. And there is. These are the teachings. It's about finding a way of being with this, with ourselves, but without clinging on to I, me, and my feelings. The minute we claim the feeling as ours and cling to it, it becomes problematic. Wherever there is clinging, there's suffering. If you suffer, just ask yourself, what is it I'm holding on to right now? And then you'll begin to see. So let me give you an example of the feeling tone of experience, and then the addition of thoughts constructing fear. You may have heard this before. I was in India. I'd been teaching at Sarnath at the Thai monastery, and I was walking home late at night, 9:30 at night, which is late in India. Walking home along this narrow alleyway, walls on both sides, my hotel was at the end of the street, 200 meters down the road. I heard behind me the yelping of a pack of Indian dogs beginning to chase after me. In the pit of my stomach, of course, is this, that sensation. That's the initial sensation of the fear. Okay? It's the feeling tone of the experience. Contact through the sound, noise. It was just the barking of dogs. My response was this feeling tone. Feeling tone, of course, is based on memory from the past. So there I was. And then, of course, the thought started to come. The dogs will bite me. And then, of course, the thoughts didn't stop there. It went to, oh, dogs in India have rabies. So then, of course, it's, I'll get rabies and I'll die a terrible death. And then it's, I'll never see my children again, my four gorgeous, divine children I love to bits. So I think, I'll never see my children again. And then I'll have to be medevaced out of India to Singapore, and how will I do that? So this is the madness of the mind. It was just sound coming to my ear. And in 3 seconds, I have a catastrophe happening. I have my whole life ending horribly. It's just thought. And with the thought, we construct our terror, our fear. So what did I do?
Good.
I didn't run, no. I thought, if I run, they'll really come after me. Did what my Indian friend had trained me to do. I picked up a rock. The dogs see you pick up the rock. They know that you've got a rock and that you're going to throw it at them. So I picked up a couple of rocks and then just kept walking as serenely as I could without running, and they yelped after me, but they didn't come too close. And then I, armed with the rocks, I thought, worst comes to worst, I can throw the rock, which is what my Indian friend had told me to do. And they stayed a little distance from me, making lots of noise, but they didn't bite, and they didn't come close enough to my heels. So I got home. I thought, much relieved, get back to the hotel. And then, of course, the fear subsided. But I laughed to myself because I thought, how ridiculous. It's just dogs. It is possible, of course, to be bitten in India, and it's an unpleasant experience. It's possible to be bitten in any country of the world. But the construction of the fear and the dramatic and catastrophic way we think about life is what we need to start to see into and know. And our fear is constructed with the thoughts. And that those thoughts are added to the sensations that we experience in the body, the Vedana. And so it's this process today that I would like you to begin to see into in your practice. So just see how when some sensations start to run through the body, just begin to see how we then have a thought that's related to the sensation, and how we add to with the mind, based on memory, based on information, whether it's wrong or right, and we overlay the actual event with the psychological memory from the past. So we say, okay, this I was born and we grew up and we had many experiences, and during this time, And looking back on this time, we have a certain view of ourselves. We think, oh, we are like this. We are this sort of person. And then when we relate to the world, to people, to our unfolding life, we react bound to our habits from the past. So we have to learn to see and know ourselves really, really well. And not simply react out of habit, but see into the constructs, see into our views of ourselves. We heard last night, if the stock market goes down and we lose, or if we lose on the stock market, we can feel stupid. If we make money, we feel fantastic. I mean, this has extraordinary potential for suffering, unless we can see it, as happened last night. Once we see what we are doing and see into it, we can free ourselves up so that we can have much more equanimity and steadiness. Now, equanimity, when we can have wonderful equanimity and steadiness, it's very close to freedom, or in many cases the equanimity is also the expression of the heart and mind that's free. So we need to see that this self that we construct with our thoughts and ideas has no reality. The self is just sensations shifting, changing. It's constructed with thoughts. They all shift and change. So many of them. One day we love ourselves and the next day we think we're hopeless. One day we think we're creative and brilliant, and the next moment or even the next second we think there's absolutely no hope for us. I mean, we can't even relate to ourselves with steadiness, let alone our partners, our lovers, our families, the other people in our society or our neighbours. So we need to learn. We need to see, actually, that the self is empty of intrinsic existence. It's just shifting, changing sensations, shifting, changing thoughts. I want to read you what the Buddha said when he was asked what his reality was. And this is in a wonderful little book by Ajahn Buddhadasa. Just one moment, I'll find the page. So the Buddha was asked, what was it like? What did he experience? What was it like to be him, in other words? And he said that he dwelt in the temple of emptiness. So, Ajahn Buddhadasa says, the Buddha once said of himself, Tathagata means the one thus gone, and it refers to the Buddha, dwells in the temple of emptiness. Not a physical temple, of course. The temple of emptiness refers to a dwelling place that is a state of mind. The temple of emptiness is an ever-present mental state or way of being or seeing with life, devoid of any ideas of self or belonging to self. And in Dharma language, this is called emptiness. It doesn't mean the sort of emptiness we talk about with depression. It means emptiness of any clinging, emptiness of any self-idea. When clinging to me and mine ceases, suffering ceases. So when we give up clinging anywhere, our suffering ceases. So, to the meditation instructions. The first of the four instructions that refer to the foundation of feeling is this. And this is one that we're going to practice and take up right now. We don't actually have the time in this very short retreat to do the entire set of the instructions, but I'd like to, in a moment, for us all to do this. The first is, I shall breathe in, experiencing joy. I shall breathe out, experiencing joy. Now, some of you might have already thought, oh, I don't feel any joy. I don't even know about it. This is ridiculous. Why is she asking me to pretend I feel joy? Steady, steady with the thoughts. So, the joy that's being talked about is unproblematic joy. So not joy where we're clinging on to some kind of sensual pleasure, but a delightful and fine joy that we can sometimes experience in this life. And as the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, he had a memory of being a child and sitting under the rose apple tree. And he was sitting watching people plough the field, and quite spontaneously, enormous joy came upon him. And on the night, as he sat under the Bodhi tree and he was reflecting on life, he remembered this experience and he thought to himself, oh, perhaps there is a joy that is of value, that is of worthwhile, which is a worthwhile thing to cultivate, which is unproblematic. And in that moment, he let go of clinging to some of the austere practices that he was doing. And that softening, that release from that which was harsh, and the loosening up and the memory of the joy led to his extraordinary awakening that night, for which we are all very grateful. So the cultivation of joy is of great importance. It's the expression of the awakened heart mind, but it's also a path to liberation. Joy is one of the factors of awakening. So in order to wake up, we actually need to cultivate joy. It's good homework. It's not so bad. So right now, if you would please, we're going to do a 3-minute meditation where I'd like you to take up this instruction. And then I'm going to ask you how it was. So the instruction is simply, I breathe in experiencing joy. I breathe out experiencing joy. So if you would please, just breathing in, breathing out. So what did you discover? Did anyone have a sensation or experience of joy? Don't rush. Yes. Yes.
I'm thinking, I don't like this as much.
Yes.
And then, like, there's no joy. It's like, oh, it's fine, but there's no joy. And then I noticed the thought of that, and that made me laugh. And then,
joy. Okay. Okay. Beautiful. So there was the resistance to the instruction, and look, truly, lots of people have resistance to this instruction. I'm not personally offended. It's okay. It's actually the Buddha's instruction. I won't take responsibility for it. But when we look, we think, oh, I don't like this. I'm not connected to it. It's not good for me. And then we see the thought and we go, oh. And then joy comes with that release of just seeing how we think there's joy. Well done. Anybody else? Sorry? Yes?
I felt that it's much natural for me to feel the joy when I inhale.
Yes.
But when I exhale, it's harder. I had to work harder to feel the joy when I exhale.
Okay. Look, I think for a 3-minute meditation, if there's joy on the inhalation, great. Well done. With practice, there'll be joy on the exhalation too. Anybody else? Yes? Yes. Beautiful. Beautiful. So the stone began to turn to sand. And there was a sense of melting. Wonderful. Yes?
I normally in my practice, I do mental noting.
Yes.
And that actually cuts the fork. So when you get the instruction, I decided not to cut the fork, just let it be stay.
Yes.
And with the amusement of having a look.
Yes.
And it actually was quite amusing.
Okay.
Because the content became sort of a source for laughter, or things became ridiculous.
Yes. So very easily we can access joy, access happiness. And the sensations that we feel sometimes when we're sitting, like just tickling sensations or tingling sensations, these are the sensations that are the beginning of joy. And the more we sit, the more we begin to feel this joy that can fill the heart and mind. Yes?
I felt that there is some joy in just in taking air in,
yes.
Some expansion.
Yes.
But there is, and also when breathing out, like if I'm very much with breathing itself, but at the same time, a bit obnoxious, and I'm not at ease with my body.
Yes.
Maybe after 2 minutes, I was already...
Already agitated or already joyful?
My attention went to the itching.
Okay. Yes, so sometimes we experience quite a bit of agitation and unpleasantness in the body. If we can just soften our resistance to that, just let them be... Very soft, very tender, very gentle. don't put too much pressure on ourselves by saying, I must feel joy or I'm a total failure. But rather just be with that feeling you had as you breathed in. Wonderful. If we can just see the beginnings of the relaxation, the beginnings of the joy. And, I mean, I have to say, in this culture, you know suffering. There's extraordinary suffering. And part of understanding how to be free from suffering is to turn the heart and mind to the moments of joy in this life. So it's a conscious practice of turning the attention to that which is already joyful, that which is already unproblematic, rather than the usual movement of mind where we go straight to that which is our problem, straight to that which is our difficulty. Yes?
For me, in some way, it was more difficult from the brief meditation because I felt joy and then it reminded me of some event in the past that I felt very joy.
Yes.
And then I forget to breathe to do the meditation. Just thought about it.
Oh, but the meditation was to feel the joy.
Yeah, but not. It's not like reading a story from the
yes. past. Yes. Okay. Okay. So, very quickly, of course, the mind can go to the past. It's a delight when the mind goes to the past when it's something pleasant. Often the mind goes to the past and we remember all the unpleasant things and not many of the pleasant. So this is a practice that you're free to take up and try if you wish. And once we start to train the mind to recognize and know the countless moments of joy that we all have in a day, we just don't give that attention to them. Our life isn't totally full of misery. Even on this retreat, there've been some moments when you've actually been okay. Truly. And of course, retreat is a place where there is a bit of additional pressure on the mind because we're sitting, we're walking, we're trying to do all sorts of different things. The ordinary self is being shaken up. So if you do experience some agitation or some tears or strong emotions, never mind. All of that is part of the retreat. Tears are welcome here. Please don't worry. Don't think you can't meditate because you felt distressed. That is not the point. We are learning to understand how our distress and suffering is put together. We're learning how to deconstruct it. And we're also learning through attention to the joy, attention to the freedom, attention to the absence of the problem. How we can train our mind and heart to the knowing of great freedom. Yes?
I have a question. I found it much easier to feel joy.
She said she found it much easier to feel joy.
Spontaneously when I'm walking.
Yes.
When I'm doing walking meditation. How can you find joy just by here and now, you know?
So walking, you can find joy. Beautiful.
So how, I don't know, how can you find joy just
okay.
from this moment?
Okay, so when you are walking, what brings you the joy?
The world.
the world? Okay. What's your relationship to the world in that moment? When you're walking,
this moment here and now.
So when you're walking and there's joy, you're present with the moment here and now. You're present with your connection with the world. It is just the same sitting. Right now. Be present. It's the same. It's our relationship to our experience. We have the thought, I can't do it while I'm sitting. You see? We have the thought, I can do it when I'm walking, but not when I'm sitting. This is mind that compares, mind that divides. mind that says, I can't. So we have to look and see how we construct our difficulty through the world of thought. You're just sitting here, not even asking you to do anything much. How can there be a problem? You see? Yes. So sometimes we get in a tangle with ourselves, our ideas, what we think, our views. Or sometimes it's a pressure we put on ourselves when we think, I won't be able to do it. I won't be able to do what she's telling me to do. So therefore I don't like it, or I don't want to do it. Yes, one more.
I noticed that I listened once to an instruction that to start laughing from the inside, like even from the eyes. And I do it. I didn't know that it's a practice, like
yes.
Joy. But whenever I do it, joy comes. I don't think about it. I don't have to think about something that makes me joy.
So when we just have that attitude of laughing from the inside. Because when we laugh, we forget ourselves, don't we? When we really laugh, the self isn't a problem. We forget all about who we are, we're just laughing. This is why laughter is so precious. Because we forget our problems. So when the self and the I, me and my subsides, joy is naturally present. I'm going to go a little over time because I want to do one more instruction. Please bear with me. The next experiment in our instructions comes from mindfulness of the mental formations, which is a complicated way of saying we're just being aware of what goes on in our heart and mind together. The Pali word is citta. It's mindfulness of the citta. So mindful of the totality of head, what goes on upstairs, and also our heart. This is actually, we look at it and think, oh, our heart is down here, and our feeling world tends to be here, and our head is up here. It's actually, when we really look, it's not like that. So, the instruction is, and it's my complete favourite. She who's not meant to have any favourites, but it is my favourite. And the instruction is really, really simple. And for some of you, the word heart will make sense. And for some of you, liberating the mind makes much more sense. And so to cover all possibilities, I use heart and mind. Sometimes citta is translated as heart-mind. There is no really accurate translation. So the instruction is, breathing in, liberating the heart and mind. Breathing out, liberating the heart and mind. So would you just please do that? So it's the simplicity of breathing in, liberating the heart and mind, breathing out, liberating the heart and mind. Just see. for anybody anything to report? For setting that intention to liberate the heart and mind. What happened? Yes?
I found that the more that I relaxed, the more
yes.
that I felt like, okay, liberation was already there. I wasn't trying to free myself and relax.
Okay.
And also that when I relaxed, I wasn't any more doing the exercise.
Yes. Beautiful. So when we just free the heart and mind, we relax into the unproblematic. We relax into the freedom. So in a way, we start from freedom. I'm just asking you to, as much as possible, begin with this attitude of extraordinary freedom and relaxation, and as you so clearly and well pointed out, not to try to gain anything, but just be with the freedom that's already here, the freedom that we can access just in a 2-minute meditation. So this is what the teachings are pointing to. The giving up of I have to try to get somewhere and to just be with the freedom that we can see and we just relax. Anybody else? Yes, at the back. Makes me more what?
Feel the pain.
Feel the pain. Okay, so please don't try. Okay, so let go of the trying. We just set the intention. Take the pressure off in terms of, see, we put pressure on ourselves to follow the instruction. It's part of the difficulty with an instruction. We're given an instruction and then we think we have to do it and we have to do it properly or we have to do it right. And the very trying makes it harder. The trying intensifies the problem instead of just relaxing into the freedom. So just loosening that thought of I have to try. And then just if we do come to the heart and mind and the heart is filled with pain and not freedom, if we do see that, then what we do is we recognize that capacity of our heart to be with the totality of all of our pain and all of our sorrow. Our heart can be with the pain, the sorrow, the joy, the serenity, the beauty. We have this amazing, wondrous capacity as a human being to embrace the totality. How else could we live through the difficulties of loss and pain and death? How could we, if our heart could not contain or could not embrace the totality? So please trust your own capacity to be with the burden of sorrow, to be with the pain. And when we are just with it, in a very gentle, loving, tender way, there's an extraordinary transformation that occurs. It's the transformation to the peace. It's the transformation to the heart and mind that's free of the suffering. When we're with our suffering, we see also the ending of our suffering. And this is what the teaching is about. So we need not only to know and explore and be with the joy, but also with wisdom, be with our suffering. And when we can just do that tenderly, with kindness, compassionately, There's an unfolding that takes place. I promise you. I promise you. So let's just sit quietly to end the instructions. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for participating in the experiments. And please take these instructions and take them up and use them, try them, explore and see for yourself what they yield.